It's Thursday, November 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. 2 days after the general election, where does the U.S. presidential race stand?
Ballots are still being counted in a handful of key states.
Plus, what's the latest on the race for control in Congress?
It looks as though Republicans are really holding on to some important seats.
New survey finds cases of human rights violations are on the rise. Well, these updates and more next. Americans awoke Thursday morning with votes still being counted in a handful of battleground states to determine whether Republican President Donald Trump will continue to be the country's chief executive for the next 4 years or be replaced by his Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara starts off.
This is what democracy looks like.
New York, a demand to count every vote as the nation continues to wait for news of a victor. People around the country are feeling anxious, including in the battleground state of Pennsylvania.
Hopefully it ends peacefully, trying to stay positive.
Ballots are still being counted in a handful of key states. But after Joe Biden was declared the winner of Michigan and Wisconsin, two states that President Trump won 4 years ago, Biden said he's confident that he'll get the 270 Electoral College votes, the minimal needed to win.
I'm not here to declare that we've won, but I am here to report when the count is finished, we believe we will be the winners.
Georgia, a traditionally Republican state, is one of the battlegrounds where Biden has stronger support from voters in cities and suburbs, but end up delivering him a victory. With the count still underway, President Trump tweeted Wednesday that he is claiming victory in Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, and Michigan, an assertion Twitter labeled as misleading. The Trump campaign is launching legal challenges to stop ballot counting in Michigan and Pennsylvania, saying Republicans did not have adequate access to observe the process.
We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list.
Trump is also demanding a recount in Wisconsin, where margins are slim. William Howell is a political scientist from the University of Chicago.
Either candidate in a case is free to ask for a recount when the margin is less than 1%. And so he can simply ask for it. Historically, though, recounts rarely, if ever, differ from the original count. And so it's not likely that's going to generate the outcome that he's looking for.
Hundreds of Trump supporters protested at a ballot counting facility in Phoenix, Arizona on Wednesday night, claiming some votes haven't been properly tallied. The final result in Arizona and other states could potentially be decided in court. Hans Pakowski from the Heritage Foundation.
If there is any litigation contesting the counting of ballots, the rejection of absentee ballots, the extension of time for absentee ballots, I have no doubt that whoever loses in that litigation probably will be prepared to litigate it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Which means finding out who won could take days or even weeks. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
VOA has ongoing and updated election result coverage on our website, as well as in our top-of-the-hour newscasts. Now, as we just heard, the counting of ballots is still underway in a handful of states. And to dive deeper into that topic, I spoke with VOA's Carolyn Pursuti in Delaware.
Absolutely, Steve. We're going to talk about Nevada first, then Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania. Those are the four main states that we're looking at now. Nevada has an interesting case because they sent mail-in ballots to every single voter in that state. So the problem being now they have to sort out who voted by mail, who voted in person. And as long as the mail-in ballot is postmarked by Election Day, Tuesday, it has until the 10th to arrive in Nevada to be counted. So we're talking several days from now until they have every single last vote counted in that state. I truly believe, though, as is the case with most states, that when it starts to look like one competitor is over the other, they will call that state. They won't wait till that very last vote is counted.
Carolyn, another race that's being closely watched is that which is taking place in Georgia. What do we know about those votes?
Absolutely. Georgia has 16 electoral votes up for grabs, and both Trump and Biden are neck and neck there right now. They're both at 49%. So we'll be looking at that very closely. They already have more than 95% of the vote already counted there. So that's going to come down to the wire. That could be just, you know, thousands of voters separating these two candidates. That's a very close one. You're right.
And lastly, Carolyn, you know, another thing that people are keeping an eye out on are recounts. And this is something that is triggered when votes and elections are incredibly close, like they are in this 2020 presidential race. And given that, you know, each state has its own process for initiating a recount, what can you tell us about, say, a state that is in play, and that's Wisconsin?
Absolutely. Wisconsin's rule is that if the two competitors are within 1%, then the person who has the lower number of votes can request the recount, and it will be granted as long as it's within 1%. So President Trump is well within his rights to request that recount. It's up to him to fund it. And then if it overturns the results, then Wisconsin refunds that money. So as you mentioned, it is up to every single state. Every state has different rules, different laws on the books for their election procedures. And that's just part of our republic that we've set up in this country, that state rights, they have the ability to make their laws within their states.
That was VOA's Carolyn Pursuti. Now, it isn't just the presidential race that hasn't been called yet. Several congressional races are still in play. Now, to get the latest on the quest to capture the control of the Senate and the House of Representatives, International Edition's Jason Patinkin spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson.
As of Thursday, it looks as though Republicans are really holding on to some important seats. That means they are maintaining their control of the U.S. Senate for now. Of course, we are coming down to a handful of close races, North Carolina and two Georgia Senate races, that really, once those close races are decided, those are going to be the seats that are going to decide control of the U.S. Senate. And if Republicans hold on.
And, you know, looking at some of the seats that have already been decided, there have been a few people who, you know, held on where they had close races and others where that flipped. Can you go into some of those key races?
Absolutely. So one key pickup for Democrats was in Colorado, where the incumbent Republican Cory Gardner lost to John Hinkenlooper. You know, that really speaks to me the fact that Colorado was thought of as a swing state for many presidential elections. And now with this race, it's solidly moved into the blue category. But Democrats didn't really have some wins over in other states like Montana and Maine. Susan Collins, who has been in the national spotlight because of her decisions on Supreme Court nominees and on the president's impeachment trial earlier this year, was able to hold on to that independent reputation that she's maintained among Maine voters and beat back a really well-funded challenger in Democrat Sarah Gannon. So Republicans are feeling actually pretty positive Thursday about their chances and about the fact that there was no blue wave of Democrat votes that some analysts had predicted.
Now, that's for the Senate. What about for the House? It looks like Democrats will probably maintain control of the House.
That's right. They absolutely are going to maintain their control of the U.S. House of Representatives, but they are not going to be making the gains that some of the Democrat leadership had really hoped to make. Nancy Pelosi was very positive earlier this week, talking about a net gain of anywhere from 5 to 10 seats. That's just not happening. They lost some of their key bellwether races in states like Virginia and Florida and really didn't make those gains that they wanted to. So there's some question that Nancy Pelosi may have another fight for her speakership when the new Congress comes in next year. That'll be something to closely watch to see how Democrats really deal with the fact that they didn't make the gains and didn't make the argument against U.S. President Donald Trump that they had hoped to make in this election.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent. Pennsylvania is proving to be a state in the U.S. presidential contest and one of the last to finish counting votes between President Donald Trump and Democratic opponent Joe Biden. Issa Shirai takes things from here.
Both President Donald Trump and Democrat Joe Biden are banking on winning Pennsylvania and its 20 electoral votes. Because counting mail-in and absentee ballots takes time, complete vote totals may not be known until the end of the week. Voters like Marion Leary say they can wait.
Yes, the anticipation is killing me. The anxiety is running high. But I feel better knowing that all of these states, including Pennsylvania, including Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, is taking the time to count the votes and making sure that they're doing it correctly.
Much of Trump's support in Pennsylvania is found in rural areas between the major cities of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Many Trump backers credit his economic performance before the pandemic. Kathleen Delhunty is one of them.
In the 4 years that he ran, was the president, I didn't make out better than I did in years to pass. So I'm happy.
But Pennsylvania has not always been a swing state. In fact, Donald Trump's victory here in 2016 was the first by a Republican presidential contender since the 1980s. David Campbell is a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame.
This is a state that has a strong working class population. You know, in the past, that had been a strong Democratic constituency. But of course, that's what's changed in American politics. The working class is now more likely to vote Republican.
While President Trump is seeking a halt to post-election day ballot counting, Philadelphia is seeing demonstrations demanding every vote to be counted, with many protesters affirming their support for Biden.
So, we know Philly's going to go blue.
We want Donald Trump out the White House. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm not going to lie.
But Pennsylvania's results and the presidential contest as a whole may not be known for several more days. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Philadelphia.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Many Americans are surprised that the U.S. presidential election has been so closely fought, reflecting a deep divide within the country. VOA's Elizabeth Lee hears from two different realities in America.
The U.S. may be one country, but as the presidential election shows, Americans seem to be living in two different realities, depending on their political preferences. This man, who only gives his first name as Jeff, is a Biden supporter.
I'm sick to my stomach and have been. I don't understand. I don't recognize this country anymore. I really don't. I think Donald Trump broke it.
Beth Jordan supports Trump.
Well, he improved the economy, in my opinion. My 401k is up. Rates are up. I make more money now, and my stocks have increased, and I'm earning more money.
These two views reflect a deep divide in the country. Michael Alvarez is a political scientist with the California Institute of Technology.
Now, we're divided on partisan and ideological lines. We're divided on many issues, social and economic. We're divided in, you know, our opinions and our reactions to the pandemic.
Election night was not the blue wave Democrats had hoped. Polls had shown Biden in the lead in the key battleground state of Florida, which Trump ultimately won. Why are the opinion polls off?
It could very well be that in the pandemic, a lot of these assumptions that are being made about how to target subjects for a survey and then how to reweight the data statistically may well have been systematically wrong.
While the Biden campaign focused on Trump's handling of the pandemic, the close race shows Democrats may have misjudged the importance of the other issues that led voters to support Trump.
They feel left out. They feel as if, you know, they and their families have missed out on opportunities. And I think that's the sort of discontent that Trump has really successfully seized upon. And I don't think that's changed since 2016. It's, in fact, it may have gotten worse.
The tight race also points to the changing demographics and political geography in the U.S.
I think that the predictable support from different, you know, segments like blacks for the Democratic Party, you know, is not something that the Democrats can count on. And I think that they need to really work to earn the votes of Blacks and Latinos and Hispanics.
Tracy Hinson from Biden's home state of Delaware voted for Trump.
I didn't see a lot of enthusiasm for Joe Biden. I mean, I just didn't.
Biden supporter Beth Jobson says she wants change away from the divisiveness of the last 4 years.
I'm praying for healing with our country, that we can come together and sit down and have a conversation where all sides are heard.
The next president will have to face the ongoing pandemic and its economic fallout while trying to lead a divided country. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Kosovo President Hashim Thaci resigned with immediate effect on Thursday after learning that the Kosovo War Crimes Tribunal had confirmed his indictment for war crimes. He said that the head of the Kosovo parliament will be acting president until a new one is elected. In July, Thaci, who was the former senior commander of the Kosovo Liberation Army guerrilla group, met the prosecutors in The Hague to discuss alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity during Kosovo's 1998 to 1999 uprising against Serbian rule. For the first time since the coronavirus pandemic reached the United States, the nation recorded more than 100,000 confirmed new COVID-19 cases on Wednesday, according to the COVID Tracking Project, an effort sponsored by The Atlantic magazine. There are more than 48 million cases of COVID-19 globally. China has suspended the record-breaking $35 billion stock exchange listing of Ant Group, a spin-off corporation of Chinese e-commerce conglomerate Alibaba. Regulators say changes in the regulatory environment for financial technology may cause it to fail to meet listing requirements.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Earth's magnetic field protects us from the continuous onslaught of dangerous and highly charged space particles and radiation. There is an unusually weak spot in the magnetic field called the South Atlantic Anomaly, located above South America, approximately 200 to 300 kilometers off the coast of Brazil. This dip in the magnetic field can allow some space particles to reach closer to Earth's surface than normal. Scientists say that while the anomaly doesn't really affect our daily lives, it could interfere with and damage satellites traveling through it. Scientists at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center say recent observations show that the anomaly is expanding to the west, and the magnetic field intensity there is getting weaker and is slowly splitting into two lobes, which could mean additional problems for satellite missions. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A survey of some 300 members of parliament in 19 countries finds cases of human rights violations, including physical abuse, sexual violence, torture, and arbitrary arrest of opposition members of parliament, are on the rise. Lisa Schlein has those details.
In a new report, the Interparliamentary Union in Geneva expresses concern about alleged human rights violations against parliamentarians in countries involved in recently held and coming elections. It says dozens of opposition MPs have had their rights to freedom of expression, assembly, and movement severely curtailed. The report says the arbitrary arrest, release, and rearrest of opposition MPs has become a favorite tactic of intimidation by state authorities. For example, Ugandan police have arrested and released opposition figure Bobi Wine multiple times, most recently on Tuesday, when police also allegedly threw tear gas in his car. He has denied planning rallies that could disrupt public order. The IPU has reviewed the cases of 9 Ivorian opposition MPs who have been arbitrarily arrested and detained on charges of causing public disorder and spreading fake news. It says there is no evidence proving their guilt and that the charges appear to be politically motivated in the run-up to elections held on October 31st. The IPU has been monitoring the situation in Venezuela for a number of years. IPU spokesman Thomas Fitzsimons tells VOA the level of intimidation and threats to which opposition MPs are subjected makes it unlikely that parliamentary elections on December 6th will be free and fair.
The overwhelming majority
of those 134 parliamentarians have been attacked, harassed, or otherwise intimidated. I mean, as I said, it can go from, you know, just social media abuse to actual physical violent abuse. So there are different levels on the scale of intimidation. But yeah, I would say that they are all being threatened in some way or other.
Fitzsimon says a new case of great concern is that of Joanna Mumbere, an opposition MP in Zimbabwe. He says she was detained in May after participating in a public protest to gain more protection for the poor during the coronavirus pandemic.
The country was in lockdown. She was arrested on that pretext. And in prison, the reports that we heard is that she was allegedly tortured with, you know, violence on a sexual of a sexual nature as well. So we're very concerned about that report.
IPU spokesman Fitzsimon says Mumbere has since been released on bail and reportedly rearrested. He says the constant intimidation of detention, release, and rearrest is a strategy employed by many state authorities to weaken the opposition and stay in power. There was no reaction from any of the countries mentioned. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with news and world events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com on your laptop, your phone, your tablet, or any other electronic device. And to stay up to date with current election results, listen to the top of the hour VOA newscast at voanews.com or on your local affiliate. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
5 years ago, Burmese security forces embarked on a campaign of violence and ethnic cleansing against its population of the Muslim Rohingya ethnic group. Some attacks took place between October 2016 and January 2017. A second wave began in August 2017. More than a million Rohingya refugees have fled Burma. Today, some 860,000 Rohingya refugees live in a camp in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. Another 150,000 live in other countries in the region, including India, Thailand, Indonesia, and Malaysia. Around 600,000 Rohingya remain in Burma and face systemic discrimination there. Of those, 130,000 are internally displaced people who have been confined to camps, mostly in Rakhine State. On October 22nd, the United States co-hosted a virtual conference, Sustaining International Support for the Rohingya Refugee Response, to encourage other nations to give generously to the ongoing crisis and reaffirm U.S. support for Rohingya and Bangladesh by announcing nearly $200 million in additional humanitarian aid through the end of fiscal year 2020, bringing the total U.S. contribution for this crisis response to nearly $1.2 billion since August 2017. The conference highlights an international effort to resolve the crisis, said Deputy Secretary of State Stephen Biegun, who co-hosted the virtual conference along with senior officials from the United Kingdom, the European Union, and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. It's critical for us to address these vulnerable populations' needs while redoubling our efforts to find a sustainable, long-term solution to the crisis, he said. He highlighted the role of the government of Burma in creating conditions conducive to the voluntary, safe, dignified, and sustainable return of Rohingya to Burma. As a first step, Burma must unhindered and sustained humanitarian access to affected communities. We will continue to be a partner with you in this effort, said Deputy Secretary of State Biegun. Deputy Secretary Biegun also noted that more must be done to address the root causes of violence in Rakhine State, including by cooperating to end the trafficking of weapons and narcotics that have enabled the state's violence and instability for so long. As leaders, we are putting the spotlight on our international response to the plight of the Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh and elsewhere in the region, as well as those displaced internally in Burma, he said. We will hold accountable those responsible for the horrific abuses that have occurred, and we will work with the Rohingya community to shape policies that reflect your community's decisions about your future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.